Hello, this is Nikki Toyama Sito, Executive Director of Christians for Social Action, and your host for today's episode of 20 Minute Takes. On this episode, we talk with Adam Taylor. He's the president of Sojourners and the author of A More Perfect Union, A New Vision for Building the Beloved Community. We talk about the roles that churches can have in this divided society, and he gives us some great examples of how Christian faithfulness can intersect with some of the public policy questions of our day. Join us for this conversation. Reverend Adam Taylor, thank you so much for joining us today on 20 Minute Takes.
Thanks, Nikki. It's great to be with you.
Okay, so I heard a rumor that your kiddos are following in your fast footsteps. And I heard something about a story about a pair of gold shoes. Can you tell us a little bit about the gold shoes and these fast kids you've got here?
So certainly one of the biggest joys in my life is getting to see my kids run. So yeah, I ran track through college and recently found my pair of gold shoes, my sprinting spikes.
Okay.
And I tried to pass them on to my older son, who's now 13. And I thought they still looked really cool and hot. He did not feel the same way, even though they now fit him. So his feet are as big now as I guess mine were when I was in college. But no, I'm particularly proud because they're in their indoor season and they just had the USA kind of track and field indoor championships.
Yes.
And both my sons did incredibly well. They got all American.
Amazing.
What that means is that, you know, they placed in the top eight in an event. And so both of them were in the 4x400 relay, and my younger son got fifth and my older son got second in the country. So,
oh my goodness. Congratulations.
Yeah, I am beyond proud and grateful.
So what gives you more joy, running or watching a kiddo run?
Given the state of my body now and my back, definitely watching.
So I shouldn't ask who wins if you guys are doing the same sprint.
And we tried that, actually. My wife is from Jamaica originally, so we were blessed to be able to go back for Christmas. And so we had a big race. And
you did.
My older son definitely beat me. Which actually, you know, it's a source of pride. By this stage in life, I actually think that's a good thing.
It's a parenting season, right?
Right.
Things ebb and flow. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You know, I think one of the things that I appreciate with you is that you live in this space of Christian faith and this intersection of public life and politics. And I think to like the average person on the street, there may not be a ton of good news around this idea of like Christian faith influencing politics or that sort of thing. But yeah, I know this is like one of the ponds that you swim in. Is there a particular hope or a person or a story that that fuels your hope, that inspires your vision at this intersection of kind of faith and politics and public life?
It is a great question. So I have long been inspired by the historical witness and example of the civil rights movement, particularly the role the Black church played in the civil rights movement. It really was the backbone of the civil rights struggle. And in particular, it provided both the kind of moral language for the movement, but also provided the organizing infrastructure to give people courage, to give them, you know, a sense of solidarity with one another. And it was also extremely inclusive and invitational. It invited in people of other faith traditions. Even though it was grounded in this very strong Christian faith connected to justice. So that has been kind of my historical example, and a lot of my work is certainly shaped by that. I would lift up a more recent example, which is Sojourners helped to co-found this coalition called the Circle of Protection. And it was originally founded back when we were in the midst of a big debate over the debt ceiling about 10 years ago. This was when President Obama was in office.
When the debt ceiling was a very scary thing.
It sure was, yes. And there was a real effort by the Republicans who controlled Congress at that point to try to dramatically cut funding in the budget And they're using the debt ceiling as leverage to try to make that happen.
Yeah.
And so we were deeply concerned that there were a lot of programs that provide a lifeline to people either living in poverty or just a couple steps away from poverty.
Yes.
Things like food stamps and much more. And so we put out this call to action and were able to bring together the Catholic Conference of Bishops. Mm-hmm. We brought together the National Association of Evangelicals, the National Council of Churches, Salvation Army, and just built this really big coalition that engaged in a fast. And we encouraged members of Congress to fast with us.
Yes.
And we advocated with both sides of the aisle and ultimately were successful in convincing President Obama and Speaker Boehner at the time to essentially remove those kind of programs, those mandatory programs that provide protection and support to low-income families out of the negotiation. And so, you know, literally helped to protect and save billions of dollars that provided this incredibly important lifeline. Yes. And I don't think that would have happened without the intervention of Christian leaders who, you know, really made the moral argument that we should be forming a circle of protection around those very programs. And clearly those leaders disagreed on lots of different issues. Mm-hmm. But there was this common ground about protecting the most vulnerable. And that coalition has stayed together and actually played a really key role in helping to push through an expansion of the child tax credit that literally helped to cut child poverty almost in half in the middle of the pandemic.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that expansion expired about a year and a half ago, but we are really close to getting another expansion through. And again, I feel like the role of Christian leaders has been indispensable.
Yes, I love that. It's kind of this taking this feed the hungry, care for the poor, and then turning that into these actions that sort of turn on spigots that release hundreds of millions of dollars. That I think that's such a great like Christian witness. You know, a lot of pastors and church leaders kind of on a local level, when an election comes up, they're just not exactly sure how to engage with politics in their church. You know, I think maybe they think that their congregation is going to have different conclusions on different issues or policy, and it's sort of seen as divisive or concerning. So the result is a lot of pastors or church leaders don't say much at all. What would you say, or what advice would you give to folks who are feeling maybe the need to speak up, the need to be pastoral, but at the same time, just feeling like, how do you be a wide open space for a lot of different points of view within your Christian church congregation?
So I think it's important to emphasize that politics should not be over our faith and our theology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the dangers that we've seen in our politics that in some ways has gotten worse, not better.
That's
where it's
true.
Almost as though your political affiliation, or in some cases, your even loyalty to a particular candidate, is somehow a proxy for your faithfulness and whether you are a faithful Christian or not. And I think that's just a really kind of dangerous place to be, and really is a place of idolatry. The risk is that it can be very idolatrous.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I do believe that being a disciple of Jesus, following Jesus, has profound social, political, and economic implications.
Absolutely.
And that we cannot disconnect or divorce our faith from our politics.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think that there really is a kind of healthier way in which Christians should be engaging in politics. And we can talk more about that a little bit later. But in terms of what pastors can do, I think it's really important that pastors are discipling their congregations. And what I mean by that is really helping to shape the worldview of their congregants and rooting it in core biblical principles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's important to acknowledge that, you know, the kingdom of God is never on any single ballot. So politics is about imperfect choices, right? And again, we need to create some real space for healthy conversation and debate. But part of what we're seeing in our society is things have become so us versus them, so zero sum, so vitriolic, that it is very difficult to have conversations in your workplace or in other parts of society. But at our best, the church really should be that place where we can come together because we prioritize our unity in Christ as the most important thing that binds us together.
Yeah.
And then we have a whole series of shared principles that should be uniting us. And then we try to apply that to the messiness and often the brokenness of our politics.
Yeah.
And so I think that provides a really helpful tool set, if you will. The last thing I'll just say really quickly is that, you know, tying into what I shared before about how inspirational the civil rights movement was for me, Dr. King has this quote that I think really captures what the vocation of the church should be mm-hmm. in the context of engaging in politics. He says, the church at its best should not be the master or the servant of the state, mm-hmm. but to be the conscience of the state.
Mm.
And I think that understanding of being the conscience, of being that more independent voice that is trying to hold all parties, all candidates accountable to our sense of shared values. In particular, our deep concern, certainly the concern that Christ expressed through Matthew 25, just as you do the least of these, you also do for me, mm-hmm. that we should have a particular concern for those who are the disinherited, those that are marginalized, those that are living in poverty, et cetera.
Yes.
And so, again, we should have healthy disagreements about the best policy solutions to address those challenges.
Right, right.
But we should all agree that we should have a particular concern for those populations and some of those issues.
Yes, I love that, because I think you're right that there is a way that the church could play this role, because it's sort of intergenerational. It should be diverse socioeconomically. It should pull together a wide variety of folks from different races and parts of the country around this single faith, and that there is a way that we could have a different kind of a conversation than what we see broadly. So I love that picture of what it is that the church could be and the kinds of things that it can hold. What do you think is the obstacle for the church in America? Because I think I love that picture, but I'm kind of trying to figure out, where is it happening, or are you seeing glimpses of it? And are there places where we can sort of feed what the Holy Spirit is doing?
Yeah, there are definitely glimpses of it. I would just be even more explicit in naming kind of the two extremes that I see in the church
Okay. That
I think we really need to be courageous about avoiding.
Okay.
So one extreme is essentially weaponizing faith and the language of faith to essentially justify and prop up an, you know, very partisan agenda or an overly ideological agenda.
Okay.
And I feel like, you know, we've seen this to some extent on the left and right, but I think it's been much more common on the right. And and sadly, you know, and certainly polling is kind of reinforcing this, the kind of white evangelical movement in particular has become, in the minds of many, much more of a political movement than it has, than it remains as a core theological movement. So many of the people that have now said that they have become an evangelical have done so because they associate evangelicalism with former President Trump.
Uh-huh.
And because those two things are kind of fused together in their mind, you know, they are claiming that they are an evangelical, even though most of them or many of them aren't active in a church. They don't necessarily subscribe to the core tenets of the evangelical tradition. And so again, I think there's just this risk that, you know, parts of the church are becoming kind of taken over by politics and a very narrow form of politics, more so than being animated by, you know, a core set of theological commitments and you know, a relationship with Christ. So that's kind of one danger.
Okay.
The other danger is that because our politics have become so extremely polarized, I actually call it a form of toxic polarization, because it's become a polarization that's almost like a vicious cycle where, you know, we're caught in this vicious cycle of not only distrusting and disliking people that have a different political perspective, but Pew polling now shows that the majority of Republicans and Democrats literally have contempt for each other.
Oh, wow.
And instead of wanting to persuade one another, they want to defeat one another. Again,
it's
like a really dangerous place to be.
There's like an actual emotional reaction.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. And so in response to that, I understand where this kind of can come from. Many, many pastors are literally just disengaging from politics. They're trying to create this kind of apolitical space where we're not going to address social and political issues as a way to maintain a sense of unity.
Right.
And again, like, I get it. But the challenge with that is, one, I think that you're going to end up with a pretty shallow and superficial unity because your targets are being influenced by all this polarization outside of the church. And a lot of that polarization is going to seep into your church, whether you want it to or not.
Yes.
And then secondly, tied into a little bit of what I said before, I don't think it's actually faithful for churches not to try to disciple their congregations in a way that help them be better citizens in the world, if you will.
That's right.
And
that's
better
right.
agents in our democracy.
Yeah.
And so one of the hopeful glimpses that I see is that, kind of building on the legacy of the civil rights movement, Sojourners has teamed up with the Skinner Leadership Institute and the Georgetown uh-huh. Center for Faith and Justice, as well as a whole coalition of Christian organizations, to really try to protect our democracy and the freedom to vote in a time when our democracy is really fragile. And we've seen pretty overt efforts to try to put new restrictions on who can vote or making it more difficult for Black and Brown populations to vote. And we've seen, you know, a kind of era where there's been, you know, unfortunately, because of the big lie that the last election was stolen, a real eroding of confidence in our election system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. certainly our democracy is far from perfect, but uh-huh. part of what lends our democracy legitimacy is one person, one vote, that, you know, yes. everyone, at least in principle, should have the freedom to vote. And so we have been working in 10 battleground states, but also, you know, extending the campaign around the country to try to mobilize faith leaders to be on the front lines of ensuring that we can have a free, fair, and safe election. And that it includes, you know, meeting with election officials to try to be supportive, but also hold them accountable. We've been doing a lot of voter education work, all nonpartisan. This is not about trying to convince people to vote one way or the other. Uh-huh. It's trying to convince people to vote and to try to ensure that they can vote without, you know, intimidation or at worst political violence.
Yes.
And then we've been kind of the highlight of the program is we have this poll chaplain program where we literally are training clergy to provide a moral presence at polling sites to ensure that they can be a welcoming presence, they can be a deterrent for intimidation and violence, et cetera. And, you know, we're really hoping to mobilize more than 2,000 clergy in this next election across these 10 states. You can learn more at turnoutsunday.com if you're interested in the program. But I'm really excited and hopeful because I've seen how this has united a really broad cross-section of the church mm-hmm. to say, like, we need to be on the front lines of not only defending our democracy, but strengthening it. And, you know, I think this is a really powerful witness, particularly in this moment.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the way that it really pushes the church outside of the walls of the church to participate in the lives of the community in a way that is, you know, being a really good neighbor, I think, in the way that the church is supposed to be. I think one of the things that you had said, you're warning us about these two different extremes, you know, and one of them is sort of this, can be this tendency to be a little apolitical, creating this, I'll call it a myth of an apolitical church space. I think what sometimes people don't recognize is what one person would call political is another pastor's pastoral issue for their congregation. And I think that's one of the, you know, this, what does it mean to bring our Christian faithfulness to all areas of our life? What can a Christian leader do if they are also, like you, concerned about this toxic polarization, but they're not exactly sure sort of where to start? They, you know, they really don't want to feed into some of these dynamics, but they're maybe feeling a little intimidated. What would you advise folks in kind of a good place to start?
One good place to start is that there are more tools and resources now out there for churches uh-huh. in order to grow the capacity of your church to have hard conversations.
Okay.
But to do it by centering a real commitment to civility, a real commitment to curiosity, to empathy, and again, grounding it in these kind of shared Christian values.
Yes.
For example, Sojourners is revamping a curriculum that we hope to be launching in the next month or so called Bridging Divides that mm-hmm. literally mm-hmm. takes a small group through a very deliberate process mm-hmm. of being able to model what kind of hard conversations can look like.
Yes.
And then anchoring those conversations in core biblical principles. Mm-hmm. There's an initiative that's out now that's really designed for the evangelical world or evangelical churches called the After Party mm-hmm. that Russell Moore and David French and Reverend Chang, who I know you know as well, have developed, that I think is also a really important intervention. And it's really trying to help churches better reflect on the how we engage in politics,
yeah,
and not just the, you know, why we engage, and to try to improve the how. And then one last thing I'll mention, which is also about the, both the why and the how, is an initiative that you helped to co-shape, which I'm grateful for, Nikki, which is called A Call to Civic Discipleship. Mm-hmm. And it is an initiative that we're going to be launching publicly within the next month that really is trying to fashion and to explain what a healthier form of Christian engagement in politics could look like. Mm-hmm. We're called to be salt and light, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
How do we actually do that in the midst of all the polarization, all of the vitriol, et cetera? And so what the initiative is doing is it's got a kind of moral framework that, again, tries to resist these two poles of weaponizing our faith or becoming overly apolitical and disengaging from politics, and says, mm-hmm. no, there's actually a third way where we can engage in a way that actually could help to bring some healing and transformation into our politics itself. And it's by embracing a whole series of principles, all rooted in scripture. So, you know, we should be embracing the fruits of the spirit, which mm-hmm. are all kind of countercultural in our politics right now.
No, how true.
Gentleness,
true.
Meekness, right? Loving our enemies is kind of a radical thing right now.
That's right.
But
that's
it's
true.
Not just, you know, kind of optional advice by Jesus. This is a command that we should love our enemies.
That's how we're supposed to show up in the world, right?
Exactly. We should, you know, have a deep commitment to confronting violence and falsehood with a commitment to nonviolence and truth. Mm-hmm. Part of what has made our politics so broken is that we are living in such different ecosystems when it comes to how we access information and how we understand what the truth is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the truth at its best is meant to be kind of a referee in our politics, but we're kind of missing that referee because many people are literally getting their information from oftentimes pretty biased and extreme sources.
Yes.
So how could the church be a place where you could get a broader set of perspectives and you could really try to get to the truth of what's happening, right?
Yes.
Exercising prudence, embracing a long-term view, being engaged in politics but never used by politics, being political but not overly partisan. Mm. All of these things are kind of critical ways in which we can show up differently. And, you know, I really want the way in which we engage in politics, which also just includes voting and protecting the freedom to vote, to also be a form of evangelism. You know, maybe it's a more subtle form of evangelism, but I think part of the reason why there's so many young people in particular that are disaffected and disillusioned with the church is they see this kind of hyper-politicization of the church.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they see the church just not being relevant because it's apolitical, right?
Yes, right.
And so, you know, us showing this healthier version of engagement actually could help inspire some folks to have a higher regard to the church and might bring them back. So there is this kind of role of evangelism that's built into this too.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's a way to kind of model out what Christian faithfulness can look like, engaging in something that's a little bit intimidating and as you said, maybe not a lot of great examples, but I love how it's an opportunity to bear witness in our communities, in our nation, about the goodness and the character of God. Adam Taylor, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of 20 Minute Takes.
Thank you.
Minute Takes is a production of Christians for Social Action. Our music was created by Andre Henry, and this episode was mixed and engineered by Willosa Media. If you liked this episode, spread the word by subscribing, reviewing, or sharing. I'm your host, Nikki Toyamasito. If you want to find out more about our work, visit the website at christiansforsocialaction.org.